time to go behind enemy lines. We get you ready for the Warriors and the Trailblazers in the Western Conference Finals. 95.7 The Game's Warriors reporter John Dickinson teams up with 1080 The Fan's Brandon Sprague to bring you Behind Enemy Lines.
From the hash mark, he got it! Curry!
And welcome in to our Behind Enemy Lines podcast, a collaborative effort. John Dickinson of 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, joined by Brandon Sprague, 1080 The Fan in Portland, host of Dirt and Sprague from noon to 3 Pacific on 1080 The Fan in Portland. And we're going to bring this podcast to you before each game of the Warriors-Blazers Western Conference Final Series. So it should be a lot of fun. Brandon, really appreciate the time, and thanks for joining me here throughout the course of this series. Hopefully it's a longer one as opposed to a shorter one.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, first of all, John, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to do this with you guys down there. If game one is any indication of the way the series is going, we're only going to do a few of these, and then you guys will be off to the NBA Finals yet again.
Yeah, and really, you look at game one, and there were so many questions, and that's become really the last couple of days up here on all of the shows. It's been, will this be a four-game series, or will this be the gentleman's sweep of Portland goes home and figures out a way to find it for one night in front of that great Moda Center crowd, and then only to have the Warriors take the other game and come back for a game five and wrap it up right there. Stephen Curry just fantastic in game one, and a lot of question as to how the Blazers were defending him. What did you make of the Blazers in game one, the defense on Curry, their overall energy level? I mean, how much of the belief in Portland is the Blazers had maybe a little bit of a lingering effect from the Denver series and the game seven, which was played about 48 to 54 hours earlier?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much time you have here, John, but I could go off for probably about an hour of what we saw from game one on Portland. But, you know, my thoughts are, I talked about this yesterday on the show up here, is I don't like the whole tired and getting over the game seven stuff. Denver played 2 days after their game seven against San Antonio against this Blazers team. They won game one. Portland had a week off from round one to round two. They got plenty of rest in that one. And they only played one extra game more than Golden State thus far. So if you really break it down, it's not like the rest and the minutes are really that much different between these two teams. I thought Portland just came out and won. I think there's something to that Western Conference final stage that you're on ESPN, you're one of four teams remaining. This franchise hasn't been there in 19 years. Nobody on this team has done it collectively here in Portland. And there was something to Golden State having that confidence, knowing, you know what, we've been doing this for five straight seasons. This is nothing new to us. And it was frustrating because yesterday we found out that Evan Turner came out and basically said that Terry Stotts, they flew in from Denver into the Bay on Sunday. They took Monday off. They didn't do any film. They didn't have any practice, no shoot around, no nothing. Stotts thought all the guys deserve a day off. They didn't start watching film, John, until game one game day at 11 a.m. And when you go back and you watch their defensive breakdowns, which there's far too many to even count, there's a reason Steph Curry had more open looks from three than the entire Portland team. Golden State, I've been alluding to this, but going into the series, you guys never play ISO ball unless KD's really in there. It's so refreshing to watch basketball get played at the level that they play it, and Portland basically doesn't do that. They have real lulls where they just don't move the ball very well. They play ISO ball with Dame or CJ, and they kind of get caught, and you can't do that against Golden State. So I think the eye-opening thing, aside from just the poor effort, was the fact that they basically punted on game one. You can talk about rest. You can talk about mental fatigue. I don't know how you don't view it any other way, though. When you don't watch any film, you don't do any shoot-around, no nothing, you didn't touch a ball for 36 hours, and Golden State's coming in going, hey, we've been doing this for 4 years now. We're looking to do it for five. You can't punt games away against the Golden State Warriors with or without KD. They're too damn talented. So I didn't like that admission by Evan Turner. I appreciate the honesty from him, but I didn't like finding that out as a fan and as a media member kind of around this team. That's unfortunate because you punt games against this team, and you're going to look up and go, oh, yeah, we're a game away from elimination. And I would say today right now, John, based on what we saw, Portland has to give everything in this game, too. And if they can steal it, if they can, I still think this series can go 6 or 7. But if it looks a lot of the same that we saw game one, again, I don't think we'll be doing very many of these Behind the Enemy Line podcasts.
Yeah, and you look at the Warriors and their record in game one under Steve Kerr. They've only lost one of them now, 18-1, going back to game ones in the playoffs since the 2015 postseason. The Oklahoma City in the 2016 conference finals, the only team that came into Oracle Arena and got the Warriors in a game one. And the Warriors have only had to play one of those on the road, and it was last year in Houston. And I think it was a similar type situation for the Rockets as maybe the Blazers. A lot of pressure in that game one, as you know, having it be their time to maybe take down the champs, and having that game even in their building didn't matter much, with the Warriors able to go in there with the experience and get the job done. They've been phenomenal in game ones during this reign of terror, shall we say, over the rest of the NBA. You know, big talking point here in the Bay Area the last couple of days has been the Warriors bench, a maligned Warriors bench in the regular season and in the playoffs, so much so that Steve Kerr really went away from that bench in the early going of the Rockets series. But they gave him a lift without Kevin Durant in Game 6 in Houston. Steve Kerr almost forced to play them because of the injury to Durant. No way you could make up for his loss in the 40, 45 minutes he was playing with just one player. So it was a little bit of Jarebko, and Quinn Cook had to play, and Alphonso McKinney played some, and Jordan Bell got minutes. There were really four or five different guys that made up for Durant in terms of just the minutes played. And Steve Kerr admonished himself at the end of that series for not trusting those players earlier in the series, and he said, I'm going to do it in the next series. This is a series that I think the bench can play and be effective. I'll give you another example of something that can't continue from the Blazers' point of view. If the Warriors' bench unit, beginning of the second, beginning of the fourth quarter, and I know Klay Thompson's out there with them at that point in time, but if that's going to be a positive for the Warriors that time of the game, I think we also might be looking at a short series.
Oh, without a doubt, John. I think you hit the nail right on the head. If the bench is going to play that way, if Jarebko is going to be hitting those weird, it's not even like a step back. It's like a slow man's drag that he does, where he steps behind the three-point line when he crosses it, and he's going to hit that shot. If Quinn Cook is going to hit some threes the way he did at the end of that game. And look, Jordan Bell might not have lit up the scoreboard there, but I thought he really gave them some real productive minutes on defense. Active guy, obviously, on the offensive end, and we know that up here in Oregon better than anybody. But if the bench is going to play that way, there's almost nothing Portland can do. You're going to need Herculean-like efforts from Dame and CJ to give yourself a shot. And I thought going into this series, you look at the numbers, they had produced Golden State 19% of their points from the bench. That was far and away the fewest of any team in the postseason. So to go out there in game one and expect or be ready for the bench of Golden State to produce and step up for them, I think that kind of surprised Portland, because Portland's one of those teams that, Stotts, not like in the Kerr way, but Stotts really trusts his guys. And whether it's Dame or Evan Turner, it doesn't matter. Like, he throws guys in there knowing or thinking that they are going to contribute in a positive effect. And he's been doing that his entire career. He's kind of been forced to, too, because the roster hasn't really been all that complete. And so going in, I thought, okay, clear advantage is going to be Portland's bench. I don't know, man. Game one, if Jarebko's going to come off and McKinney's confident and he hits a couple shots, and Quinn Cook, et cetera, man, if that's going to happen and you're getting outplayed even there, I really don't know how you take down Golden State. I still think their biggest concern is going to be their starting lineup. You put Aminu and Harkless out there, John, and they basically are telling you, we have two guys that can't shoot. You want to count counter, that's, or Cantor, that's three. They only roll out Dame and CJ, who are really deadly from behind the arc. Aminu has been abysmal, and I'm talking so bad, it's to the point in Portland where people don't even want him to play. Like, not even, hey, let's limit him to 15 to 17 minutes. It's like, don't put him out there. He's not making much of an impact defensively. He sure as heck hasn't been hitting anything since the Oklahoma City series. And if he's not doing anything on defense, he is kind of useless. And I thought you saw Golden State really treat him that way on defense, where, whether it was Draymond or Iggy, they just say, hey, we're leaving you and we're going to come help if Dame and CJ come in. We'll help on the screens. Like, they are just daring Portland to beat them without Farouq Aminu. And that's a pretty big problem, because if he's not going to do anything, then how do you change your lineup? They could go Dame, they could go CJ, Rodney Hood, and then Zach Collins or Mo Harkless mixed in with Cantor. But Stotts is also real, he's real old school. He's get off my lawn guy when you talk about rotations and lineups. He doesn't like to talk about it. He doesn't like when people ask the questions about it. Nor does he really budge on changing that much. I mean, it was a shock during Game 7 when Mo Harkless didn't start in the second half of that one. So we'll see if he makes any changes, because right now they're trotting out two guards that can shoot while three other people can't. And that's going to be a bit of a concern against Golden State, who, as we all know, incredibly deadly from behind the arc, and you can't trade twos for threes.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, Brandon, when the Blazers have hung with the Warriors and even beaten the Warriors in the regular season, it's been a whole lot of Damian Lillard, it's been a lot of C.J. McCollum, but it's also been guys like Harkless and in particular Aminu, who have knocked down some threes against the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Not every game, but when the Warriors when the Blazers have played well against the Warriors, he's actually been an effective offensive threat in those games. To see him be borderline unplayable at this point, I mean, that's a big-time advantage for the Warriors. This is our Behind the Enemy Lines podcast. Brandon Sprague of 1080 The Fan in Portland, host of the Dirt and Sprague Show, noon to 3 Pacific time on 1080 The Fan in Portland. I am John Dickinson of 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. Brandon, I know, is going to join my show on Saturday leading up to Game 3 of this series, and we're going to be doing this podcast leading up to each of the remaining games of this Western Conference Finals series. Brandon, I thought Damian Lillard had the quote of the night when you start talking about defense. He actually had a couple of them, but he said he couldn't even get an attempt up when he was trying to force a shot. The Warriors got back to what they like to call championship-level defense. And it's been hit or miss throughout the postseason, but I think as they've gotten closer to their goal, which is to three-peat and win for the fourth time in 5 years, you're starting to see them ramp it up almost seemingly by the game, maybe even to another level without Kevin Durant. What can the Blazers do to get Damian Lillard going? Because I'm not used to ever seeing Damian Lillard not be able to get a shot when he wants to take a shot.
Yeah, you know what they're doing now is basically after that game one, he's on a little bit of a stretch here. He was good in game six against the Nuggets. Other than that, even the game where they went to four overtimes, his stats look good, but he hasn't really been hitting at that clip that we sure as heck saw against Oklahoma City, but what we really saw those last about 12 games when they didn't have CJ or Nurk. And a lot of people up here kind of wondering what's going on, how much of this is the opponent's defense. And now we've moved on to he's tired. He's extremely tired. And my thought on that is, I mean, I'm sure he's tired, but do you think Steph and Clay are tired? They've been doing this for 5 years, getting to the Western Conference Finals or further. Do you think X and X players that are playing right now are tired? Like, he's not the only one that's tired. And I don't like cop-outs like that. This is going to be the $200 million man for your franchise. And as much as we love and respect him because he loves being here, these are the moments. These are the times when you step up and, you know, you kind of grit through the fatigue and the mental wear that the playoffs can get you. Like, he wants this, right? He wants to be on the stage with Steph and go one-on-one, and he's just not performing. I do think you give Golden State a lot of credit for what they were able to do defensively. They were sending two at him as soon as he crossed half court. But what I was saying and what I've been thinking about, especially after watching Game 1, and this is where Steph is so good and where Clay and the Warriors system is so perfect. When teams do that to them, if they do, when teams do that to them, they get the ball out quick. They don't allow the second guy to get there. They're always passing off. And then they don't just stop. They're moving. They're constantly moving in this wave of back screens and baselines and from one end to the other. They're always moving, and they're rotating, and they're moving the ball, and they eventually end up, even if Steph has a double team thrown at him, they end up finding Steph three open for three. You know, I didn't like Stotts' reply to the whole approach defensively for Portland. I thought it was a bit jackassish, but my thought was he's not wrong. Like, Steph had guys thrown at him against Houston, and he still scored 33. And it's for those reasons right there of getting the ball out and never stop moving and finding the open spot that he really flourishes. If you watch Damian Lillard in game one, and I'll see, it'd be interesting to see if he does this in game two, John. Game one, he passes the ball and he doesn't ever move. He kind of just drifts. He drifts like to the corner a little bit, or he'll drift to the wing a little bit if he's at the top. And he can't do that. Like, you have to also try to tire out the Clay and the Stephs and the Iggies, whoever's on you, because if you don't, you're making life way too easy for them defensively, and you're not also helping your team by getting open and being the guy to go lead them in points. Quite frankly, I mean, it really is as simple for them. They are not going to win the series if Clay and Steph outplay Dame and CJ. The chance for Portland to actually upset Golden State and stop this run is Dame and CJ take it up a level, and they just outplay them the way that they did Paul George and Westbrook in that first-round series. And game one, if that's an indication of what's to come offensively, they're in trouble. Dame just cannot hold the ball. He cannot allow Golden State to put two on him, because if he does, he is making it far too easy. Just like defensively for Portland, I don't think it's as simple as putting two on Steph, because Draymond's so good and Clay is so good with the ball that when Steph gets it out, now you're playing at a disadvantage of 4-on-3.
Yeah, and that's what the Warriors do so well, is get the ball to Draymond. And I think one of the big differences between these two teams is just the fact that the Blazers don't have as many playmakers. The Blazers have Lillard and they have McCollum. The Warriors obviously have Curry, and when Durant's out there, he can score at will on anybody. But it's the Draymond Greens or the Iguodalas, and the guys that can make plays for the lesser players, frankly, or get the ball, like you were saying, back to Stephen Curry or back to Klay Thompson. So it's weaponry. But I think if I'm just looking at one thing and watching the Blazers, and I watch the Blazers a lot, it's just that next level is, how do you turn Aminu or Harkless or maybe one of those bench guys into a player that's able to create a little bit more for the rest of the team?
Well, and John, on that point, because you kind of got me thinking a little more, and I think that's obviously been a big concern up here in Portland of the adjustments they make. I'll give you a lineup right now that I really want to see that I think answers kind of the question you're throwing out there. Because, look, the fact is this. Like, you guys have a Draymond. We don't have a Draymond, right? You have three All-Stars still out there, and they're guys that have won at a high level and know what it takes to execute. And they've basically seen every defensive scheme thrown at them, and they're ready for almost anything. If you're going to counteract it, though, and you're going to say, okay, Golden State's going to do what they did, they're going to throw two at Dame, here's where there's a lineup out there that I think has a chance to be effective enough to maybe cut down the doubles on Dame and allow him to get a little more one-on-one. And that lineup would be Dame. It would be CJ. So you have two shooters out there. You throw Rodney Hood, who's about a 6'8 guy. He's lanky. He's been hitting at a good clip lately. Like, he's really been effective offensively for them. You throw him out there. There's your other shooter. I think you keep Zach Collins out. He's a young 7-foot big. He's shown real promise. You know, he's not, again, dropping 15 and 10 on you, but I think he's real active defensively and can make life difficult. He's also got, I would call it Draymond extremely light. Like, he's got that dog in him where he's not backing down. He tells guys to F off all the time on the court. He's got that attitude to him. And I think
he got into it with Klay Thompson, for crying out loud, Brandon. Him and Klay Thompson were going at back in December.
I know, he doesn't care. Yeah, I remember that melee. He doesn't care who you are. He'll let you know how he feels. So you have Dame, CJ Hood, you throw Collins, and I'll give you a wild card for Portland. I think they need to be playing Evan Turner heavy minutes. Now, I don't know about you, John, but when we get a bad contract in Portland, we immediately hate that player. Like, Evan Turner and Myers Leonard are probably the two players we dislike the most up here, only because of the amount of money that Neil Olshey decided to pay them. Not because they stole the money, but because they were paid that money. But what Evan Turner did really well against Denver was he kind of played the Draymond role. There were large stretches, especially in Game 6. He was facilitating their offense. He was dribbling up. He can't shoot the ball for anything. He can't shoot to save his life. But he knows that, and he doesn't force shots up. So what he does is he runs point, and basically you could pass to him. If Dame was getting a double thrown, he can look to Evan and around the free throw to top of the three-point line, dump it to him. Evan has this ability where he can dribble in. He's got just enough handle, and he's got just enough basketball IQ. he can find open guys. And I think if there's anything that can counteract Golden State's Draymond effect, it's Evan Turner. And I feel like now that I've said that, Portland fan is going to hate me forever. They're going to boo me when they see me. They're going to not want to see that happen. But the guy only had 2 turnovers against Denver the whole series. He had 7 rebounds and 7 assists in game 6. He really kind of orchestrated their win in that game with Rodney Hood, with Zach Collins. And it's funny because they played that well. Dame and CJ both ended up with 30 each. That's the recipe for them to win. They have to do what they did in game 6. And I think that lineup is really involving Evan Turner.
How much can Portland play that lineup? Because, I mean, this series is all about adjustments, and the team that wins typically makes fewer adjustments. So we're spending a little bit more time on the Portland adjustments for the purposes of this conversation. I'll just give you, from the Warriors' point of view, really the only thing they didn't like was they let Cantor kind of dominate the glass, and they thought they played a little bit too rushed early in the game. So that's a scary thought for you guys up there. That you know, they didn't really get into an offensive flow like they wanted to until the second, third, and fourth quarters of the game. They feel they could have started a little bit more patient. But from the as we wrap this up here, give me the one adjustment and how much maybe they could play that lineup, because I'll give you a half adjustment for Portland too. You gotta do something against that bench lineup that's different. You gotta maybe change the rotation to where you, because teams when they have success against the Warriors, they stagger their minutes to where they can crush the bench if Steve Kerr is going to be so willing to do it. That's what the Rockets did in almost every game of that series until game 6.
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's, it's tough to really, I think, John, I think you presented, when the team loses by 22 and they look that flat, I don't know if you can pinpoint just one adjustment. I would look for this. If Stotts trots out the same starting group, which he has all year, I mean, a Mo Harkless went through a stretch for like 2 months where he couldn't do Jack, and it did not matter to Terry Stotts. If he trots that lineup out, I think you give Aminu about 3 to 4 minutes, and if he does nothing, he's 0-for-1, 0-for-2, and not really doing anything defensively, you're sitting him. He's riding pine, and you're saying, you know what? We're going to rock with 7 guys tonight, or maybe 8 if you want to go Zach, Seth, and then Evan Turner. You mix in, obviously, Dame CJ. I don't know. I really don't know if I can pinpoint one adjustment for you. You're 100% right that you got to attack the bench group. But the tough thing for Portland is they're not having their guys step up. At least they didn't in game 1. So they're going to need role players to step up here. And whether that's Evan Turner, like I mentioned, of what they would change offensively, or you find a different approach, you have to get Dame more than 12 shots. If they're going to lose in this series, like, Portland fans not going to be devastated because we're playing with house money. This is a run we didn't expect. Most of us realistically thought they were going to lose to OKC. This has been so much fun. But you don't also want to see them take this for granted, right? Because you never know if you're getting back here. But if they're going to lose and Golden State's going to beat them quick, Dame has got to fire. Go down swinging. I want Damian Lillard averaging 27 shots a game. I don't even care about efficiency. You can't go out with your best player shooting 12 shots. You can't be 4-12. That's inexcusable, and that also speaks on Stotts, because as Dame mentioned, and you've got the quote, he couldn't even force a shot up. They were throwing so many different looks at him that they put him in bad positions. So I would just say you need to figure out, and I hope that they've watched enough film to do this, you need to figure out the lineup that is going to free shots up for Dame. Because as great as Dame is, CJ is a slightly better one-on-one player than Damian Lillard. I know that might seem insane, but the dude is so crafty. He's shifty. His body, the angles he can take, he can get his shot. And they're also not sending two at him the way they are Dame. Dame is kind of the everything for Portland. I know that's Captain Obvious here, but you need to figure out, they need to figure out what lineup is going to get him more looks, because if you're only getting 12 shots, Golden State's going to take that every time, and they're going to say, sure, we'll let Rodney Hood score 20 points. Yeah, Zach Collins can get 15 if he wants. You're playing right into their hand, and you're not going to win that way.
Brandon, really appreciate it, man. This is going to be a lot of fun, whether we end up doing two more of these or whether we end up doing five more of these. It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining me. And I know I'm going to be on your show throughout the course of the week. You're going to be on my show here leading up to Game 3 on Saturday, and we're going to continue to roll out these podcasts before each of the games in this series. So really appreciate it. A lot of fun, and thanks a lot for agreeing to do it.
Yeah, man, for everybody down in the Bay that wants to catch you on my show today, I would remind you the radio.com website or app. You can see 1080 The Fan on there. Just type it in, and John, you'll be on with us at 12:30 Pacific today. We're looking forward to that conversation, and thanks for inviting me, man. I'm looking forward to a few more of these and on Saturday.
All right, that's going to do it. Behind Enemy Lines podcast, John Dickinson, Brandon Sprague of 1080 The Fan in Portland. We'll talk to you on Saturday.
This has been a production of Radio.com Sports.